The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
With Jaguar. Introducing Jaguar Checkered Flag Special Editions. Our world-class saloons and SUVs are better than ever, with more luxury as standard. Jaguar.ie.
A new book has just been published, which sheds light on the enigma that is the First Lady of the United States. It's called The Art of Her Deal, subtitled The Untold Story of Melania Trump. And it tells her story from her childhood in the communist era Slovenia in former Yugoslavia to her years as a model in the United States, her meeting, her marriage to Donald Trump, and her influence currently on the occupant of the most powerful office in the world. To talk about the book and the person that is the real Melania Trump, I'm joined by the book's author, Pulitzer Prize-winning Washington Post reporter Mary Jordan. Mary, good morning and welcome.
Oh, thank you, Pat. Good morning.
Now, you opened the book with, I suppose, a controversial time in Melania Trump's life, and that is with the Billy Bush tapes that surfaced and, you know, the embarrassment to all on the Trump campaign, including Donald Trump himself. And it appears from your description that for all the heat he might have got from political opponents and from the press, the person he was really afraid of was Melania Trump.
Exactly. I think that was the moment that she had the most power over Donald Trump. Because remember, when that tape surfaced and in it he was saying very crude, vulgar things about grabbing women, it was just 1 month before the November election. And it was a tight race with Hillary Clinton. So he said these disgusting things. The world, you know, and certainly all the voters in America heard it. And if Melania hadn't backed him up and said, oh, this is just boys talk, this is not really how he is, he's very respectful of women, I think everyone on the campaign and Donald Trump knew that he would probably lose.
Now, what fascinates me about this is that you report through your sources that what she said to him was, irrespective of the rights and wrongs of his boasting about women and so on, she says to him, you could have blown this for us.
Well, that's,
and that's interesting
why,
because it's never been seen really as an equal partnership.
Well, and also, you know, people have this image that she's trapped in the White House. She hates it. She, you know, she just wanted to be wealthy and living in, quietly in New York. And I think that's what I found after talking to people who know her. It took a long time. It took several years because she works on being mysterious. But she wanted to do this. She is more like Donald Trump than I think most people realize. She doesn't like to lose. She wanted to win that election. And by the way, she likes being first lady.
Who would not, I suppose. She is also from Slovenia, and she comes from Slovenia, which was emerging from Soviet domination in the former Yugoslavia. And, you know, we meet in this country and in yours, we meet many women from Eastern Europe, and they're tough. And they're often far more independent in spirit and in reality than some of their feminist counterparts in the West.
Well, Melania certainly is the most disciplined, independent. When I spoke with her, we spoke for about 45 minutes during the campaign. She was harder to get to than Donald Trump, who was pretty busy running for president. But when she used the word independent over and over again, and she doesn't really spend all that much time with him. I think they're an unusual couple in that they live such separate lives. He golfs when he has time off. She's never on the golf course. He gets up early. They have separate bedrooms. They have separate routines. They don't even like the same food. He likes, you know, French fries and meatloaf, and she likes salad. They're so different in so many ways. They spend so little time apart. And yet, she is the first call he makes after a rally. She is the one he trusts most. Because he says, everyone else around me I don't trust, but Melania has my best interest.
You also say in the book that she has incredible influence in terms of personnel in the White House, and that when it comes to discussions as to who goes and who stays, that she wins more than she loses in those debates.
over and over, the people inside the White House told me this, and people that were interviewed by them. You know, because we don't see her, she doesn't show up, you know, for the photo ops. She's often not physically there. We didn't realize that up in the private residence of the White House, Trump was summoning her to say, okay, should I fire this cabinet member? Should I hire this person? Again, he thinks she's got great instincts. And interestingly, during the campaign, when he was picking his number two, the vice president, it came down to three people. Chris Christie, former governor of New Jersey, Newt Gingrich, who had been the House Speaker in Congress, and Mike Pence. She interviewed all of them. Trump asked her to spend a lot of time with the Pences. And her verdict was, pick Pence, because he'll be content to be number two. He's not as ambitious as the other ones who will be gunning for your job. And I think this says a lot, because everyone knows that Donald Trump doesn't do co-stars. And Melania told him exactly what he heard. And he said, I don't want a co-star. I'm going to pick Mike Pence.
And of course, Newt Gingrich had already got himself notoriety and into a bit of hot water. And Chris Christie, larger than life, and certainly still ambitious at that point. And Mike Pence has demonstrated that he's very happy to be a grey character in this White House.
So, you know, I mean, it does seem that Pence has, you know, a lot of people around him have left, from John Bolton to, I don't know, the revolving door at the White House is just stunning. How many people come in, they don't get along, and then they leave. But Pence has stayed steady the whole time and seems to be enjoying his role.
Now, going back to her origins in Slovenia, a hardworking family, her father set himself above or different, apart from, shall we say, other people in the village by joining the Communist Party. And he was, in his own small way, successful. But hard work would have been the catch cry in that family.
Absolutely. I'm utterly fascinated by the parents and the mother in particular. Melania's mother is in the White House. She doesn't speak a lot of English. She takes care of Barron. She cooks for Melania. She even does the dishes. I talked to the housekeepers in the different Trump homes. They said that she's lovely. And one person who's quite close to Melania said her mother is her right hand and her left hand. And without her, there is no one. And her mother, Amalia, was a seamstress in a factory, worked there for 30 years in a state factory. She had the morning shift. She was talented, and she made, from the time Melania was small, lovely dresses that set her apart, you know, in a time when socialism meant pretty much everybody looked the same. If you were paid the same, you have the same size of apartment. It was a way that the mother made her little girls, Melania and her sister, look better than everybody else in the little town where they grew up.
Now, it's interesting that she is in the White House and can only speak Slovenian. Barron, there's the Trump's youngest child, the son of Melania, he speaks Slovenian as well. And Donald Trump sometimes complains when mother and son are talking, he doesn't understand a word of it.
Now, I imagine this, you know, in the White House, it's Melania, her son, and her parents. They're a tight unit. They spend a huge amount of time inside the White House in the private residence. And if Trump goes by, he's been heard muttering, I have no idea what they're saying. The Secret Service don't know what they're saying. You know, it's the first time ever we've had a first lady whose first language was not English. And, you know, America is a nation of immigrants, and I think a lot of people thought that she would talk more about her roots. But, of course, her husband has run on a campaign, build the wall and keep immigrants out. So I think it's pretty likely that that's why she hasn't said as much. But it's also interesting that Barron has a Slovenian passport, which means he can go to Ireland or any other EU country. He has an EU passport.
It's interesting that she keeps her Slovenian roots very much to the fore, and even her language. She is fluent in English, of course, but you point out that in the Slovenian tongue that the indefinite and definite article don't appear. So when she seems to be speaking in a very clipped foreign way, highly accented, it's simply the habit of a lifetime growing up in Slovenia. There's no there, there's no ah. So that's why she sounds still so foreign after so many years. Now, I hate to say landing Donald Trump, because that puts him as the prize rather than her as the prize. And in your book, you quote that many years ago, she was asked if she'd be with Donald Trump if he were not rich. And she shot back, "If I weren't beautiful, do you think he'd be with me?" So she can give as good as she got. But there would have been, in spite of him being already married before, there would have been competition for Donald Trump when he was back on the market.
There was indeed. And it's most important to remember that the person that she married, they got married in 2005. They met and began dating in the late 90s. Donald Trump was not the divisive person that he is now. In fact, he was, you know, hanging out with a lot of Democrats and nowhere near politics. A sign of who she married is who was at the wedding. People now that wouldn't be caught dead at a party with the Trumps. It was Bill and Hillary Clinton were at Melania and Donald's wedding. Can you imagine either of them getting invited or accepting invitation? And there were a slew of top famous, TV media personalities, the equivalent of Pat Kenny, right, in the States were there. There were all these people that today are just would never be invited because of how deadly and divisive the country has become. And that was one of the difficulties writing the book, because how you see Melania is really so often for millions of Americans how you see your husband. And that usually means you either loathe him or you love him. It's very little middle ground.
He had been married before, of course, to Ivana. I met Ivana some years ago. Never met Marla, the second wife. Maybe someday I'll meet Melania. But she understood what he required from his third wife. He'd have, you know, certain difficulties with the first two, and he didn't want to repeat those with number three.
Well, you know, she had a great advantage because he wrote and spoke about what he didn't like in his first wives. So along comes Melania. She's 24 years younger. Trump has a shelf full of books he's written. In them, he says, you know, "I don't want a woman like Ivana worked in my business. I didn't like that. Caused a lot of problems." And number two, Marla, "I didn't like that she wanted to change me." So Melania kind of had a guide to how to, you know, keep Donald Trump in line and happy. You know, she didn't do either of those. He has told people, many people that I spoke with over the last few years, that he really admires her because she's so quiet. She doesn't go to the microphone. You know, there's no such thing as a quiet Trump. You know, he's very impulsive. He loves to talk. She's the opposite. She's planned. She's the chess player. She doesn't even like publicity. So they are, you know, opposites attract in some ways. And you know, they're opposite in some ways. And they're also very alike in others. They're very, both of them are hyper-conscious of image, even if image is not always reality.
Now, I've often said on this program that, you know, the Russians play chess. The people in the West, be they Americans or others, just play checkers. And chess is a much more complicated game. You mentioned there that Melania is a chess player. And I'm wondering, would she have a view on Putin? You know, would she talk Russia with Donald Trump? Or would that be, you know, beyond the pale?
Well, it's a very good question. One of the reasons that I spent the time looking at her was because she is consequential. You know, people dismissed her as this good-looking arm candy. And it turned out that she does have his ear. He does trust her, especially lately, because he trusts almost nobody else. He's increasingly isolated. And So I was asking, well, where does he ask for her advice? And pretty much everybody was saying it's high-level personnel for sure. He trusts her to tell him what's resonating with voters. When he makes a mistake, she has been there to correct it. Famously, they had a policy on the Mexican border of separating kids from their parents. She objected. He changed it. But when it comes to specific policy, it's very rare, I'm told. But in the case of Putin, I mean, having grown up and, you know, she left there at 21. It wasn't like she was 2 or 3 years old. And so I've got to believe that she does know a lot and he does trust at least the broad outlines of what she thinks about Russia and Putin. And of course, she was the only person in that famous meeting where it was Trump, Putin, Melania, and a Russian translator. And to this day, people in America are just amazed that those were people were talking and there was no other translator on the American side. And everybody wants to know, well, what were they talking about?
Yeah, because Melania, she claims she speaks a number of languages, certainly Slovenian and English, but children in Slovenia in the time that she grew up would have been learning Russian as a second language. So she would be somewhat fluent in that language, even though many of the Slovenians probably didn't like the language per se, because it was the language of an oppressor. The question of prenups, you write that prenuptial and postnuptial agreements are as standard as wedding rings in Trump's marriages. Ivana renegotiated hers 3 times. Marla, who separated after 4 years of marriage, walked away with such a relatively small sum that a Trump lawyer said she should have gotten more from Donald Trump. So the whole question of the renegotiation of the prenup, because everything changed once he became president.
And this is, you know, in his famous book, Trump's famous book, The Art of the Deal, he boasts that he's the best negotiator in the world. And he says, nobody can get a better deal. And the reason is because I always know how to have leverage. Leverage is when you have something the other guy wants. Well, Melania is a good student, very, very shrewd, very smart, very savvy. The moment she had leverage was when he went into politics. And when he did not like it when she swatted his hands away, her hand, you know, he was trying to grab her hand and she swatted it away. And, you know, everyone was saying, well, their marriage looks like on the rocks. He didn't like it when she didn't show up and stand by him at the side. For the first 6 months, she stayed in New York with Barron. And all that time, it turned out, as I learned from people I spoke with, she was putting pressure to get a better financial deal than she agreed to before they got married. It's quite clever, actually.
So that's why she was in New York, rather than waiting for Barron to conclude his schooling. It was all about the leverage. He needed a first lady who was present and evident by his side. And she withdrew, shall we say, her affections until that document was signed.
Well, it did. It was also very handy for Barron to be up there then, but it was the time when she was negotiating, and the distance, and the, you know, when she became invisible and everybody was gossiping about, oh my gosh, I think she's going to divorce him. He didn't like it, so it was a way to put pressure on him. And you know, he talks, you know, there's many you can find many interviews with Trump saying only a loser doesn't have a prenup, and so the idea that Melania, in her own quiet way, figured out how to be a master negotiator with the man who says he's the best was quite interesting to a lot of people.
And yet you have said, in 3 decades as a correspondent working all over the world, I've often written about the reluctant and the reclusive, including the head of a Mexican drug cartel and a Japanese princess, but nothing compared to trying to understand Melania. Which shows what a tough nut she is to crack. How does she get on with the other Trump children, with Don Jr., with Eric, and with Ivanka? I mean, the suggestion that Ivanka possibly taking over her father's empire would be a very good reason to have a more rock-solid post-nup than the first one that was agreed pre-nup.
Well, Donald has five children, and he mostly just talks about the older ones. And there's a sense that they think that they're the real Trumps, the Don Jr., Eric, and Ivanka. They're the from his first marriage. They're always front and center. Of course, they're older. You hear a lot less about the child he had with Marla, Tiffany, and Barron, who's only 14. But Melania wanted Barron to have an equal share in whatever inheritance or, you know, financial deal that the children got, especially because she does not really get along with Ivanka. And, you know, they have nicknames for each other. Ivanka used to call Melania the portrait because she was pretty, but she said as much as a painting hanging on the wall. And, you know, Melania thought that Ivanka was spoiled and called her the princess behind her back. You know, it's a stepmother, stepdaughter, not a lot of cozy love there.
You know, she doesn't say much. And yet you write that she wasn't always the voice of moderation, because when Donald Trump was attacking Barack Obama about where he was born and whether or not he was a true American and therefore would even qualify for the office of president, that she also joined in those attacks.
Well, I think that's why those who do not like her, they can't really forgive her for this, because this was this birther conspiracy that somehow the very first black president of America was illegitimate, that he wasn't really eligible to be president because of this birtherism, their theory that he was never even born in America, that he was really from Africa or somewhere. That hurt to the core. Michelle Obama has said that. And when Melania went on TV, this was, you know, before the 2016 campaign, but everybody knew it. It was just, I think she was trying to back up her husband at the time, as she always did. And that has hurt her among many people.
Did you get any insight into why Donald Trump jumped from being a pally Manhattan socialite Democrat to being the darling of the right wing from the southern states? Was there any particular thing that changed him? Was it the slights from Barack Obama, who was very witty at his expense in the foreign correspondents' dinner? Was there any particular thing? Because he's embraced the philosophy of the right wing, seemingly totally, and yet it would belie the kind of life that he led in Manhattan.
Well, that was the path to winning. You know, he it doesn't necessarily mean that those are his core beliefs, but it's the path to win. And Donald Trump likes to win. And why did he want to be president? It, you know, I've found archival material and interviews. I spent a lot of time in libraries in different parts of the country. In 1999, he was running for president, and Melania was at his side. And, you know, you go back, and he was saying the same things. In 2000, 1999 and 2000, he was saying, mocking John McCain, saying that McCain, you know, he got caught. How, you know, what, you know, anybody who gets caught is not really a hero. He was trying things out well beyond that. And I think that, you know, people told him, okay, you're not going to win on the Democratic side, but this is the path to winning. Be conservative, you know, talk about the judges, and you focus on your business ability, and you got a shot.
Finally, Mary, I should ask you to characterize their marriage. I mean, if it was a love match destined to live until one of them shuffles off this mortal coil, there'd be no need for prenups and postnups or anything else. So is it a marriage of convenience? Is it a marriage, I think someone said, about compromat, which, of course, has been used about that famous dossier and so on, that they each kind of have so much on the other that this one will go the distance?
You know, my parents are from County Mayo, and I went to school at Trinity College in Dublin, and then I was a correspondent and worked in all the continents, basically. I was based in Tokyo, Mexico, London. I have seen all kinds of relationships and marriages, and of course, love is complicated and different, but they do have a connection. They do admire things in each other, but it is unlike any couple that I've ever met because they spend so little time physically together. They are connected. They did have a relationship. It certainly has changed over the 22 years they've been together. Melania was furious when the details that the world found out about infidelities and affairs that he had with people named Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal. So it's gone up and down. But right from the beginning, it was an unusual relationship. And even then, you know, Trump's lawyers and people that knew him were saying that, you know, Melania was just very happy if she saw him, like, maybe for dinner, you know, nothing else. And he was more in love with his business than any woman. And, you know, they were both wildly independent right from the start, but it worked.
Well, it's a fascinating story, and the book is called The Art of Her Deal, subtitled The Untold Story of Melania Trump. It's available now, and I'm delighted to have had on the program the book's author, Pulitzer Prize-winning Washington Post reporter and daughter of Mayo, Mary Jordan. Thank you very much for joining us on the program.
Great to talk to you, Pat.